Welcome to Cliff's Wujo. A dojo is a place in which the martial arts are practiced. A wujo is a place in which the wu-wu arts are practiced. The wu-wu arts are all things officially denied and everything unknown. Good morning, in a sense. It's June 16th, 2012. It's 2:51 a.m. This is an unexpected podcast. It's one of those that needs to be done at this kind of time of night and under these sorts of circumstances, apparently. Basically, what's occurred is that I've had a series of epiphanies, and I think I'll end up calling this podcast something along the lines of Now We Know, or at least Now We Know Part of What's Going On. A series of events has occurred. It makes sense for everybody to go and validate these events in their own mind. And you can do so, and I'll describe how to go about it. And then I'll explain my epiphanies and how these things all fit in with what's happened with our work here at Half Past Human since 2003 or so. You have to bear with me. It is in the middle of the night. I'm trying to be quiet while Kathy and the dogs are asleep. And I don't want to set the dogs off. They'll notice I'm gone in a little while and get up. But in any event, here's the thing. There's this guy who does remote viewing. And his name is Courtney Brown. If you don't know what remote viewing is, you need to go and check it out. It has a lot of validity, and Courtney Brown has a, he's a really smart, bald guy, and he designed an experiment with remote viewing that not only validates remote viewing as a science, as a, or a tool, or applicable art, however you really want to think about it. His experiment was truly scientific in a way that most academia is not. And the stuff that he was doing his science experiment about is an art because it's an expression of humanity at one of its core levels. So go and find out about remote viewing so that I don't have to go into a lot of the details about the art itself. But here's the situation. The reason that this is so weighty on my mind is that it's because it so is coalescent with the stuff we've been doing and much of the language we've had since 2005, even earlier, really 2004, late 2004, a whole lot of things came into focus. I wish I had known then about Courtney Brown's experiment that occurred in 2008. So let me briefly describe his experiment, and then we can get into some of the details. So don't hold me to the dates on his experiment, except for the last little date there. But because you can find this out. His site, by the way, Courtney Brown's site is farsight.org, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T, as in sight, as in seeing, .org. They're a non-profit. It's a remote viewing collective, if you will, a self-organizing collective, or yeah, not necessarily self-organizing, because it's built around Courtney's experiments and his focus. When you go to a site, what you want to do is you want to push the button that says 2012 in the top menu bar. I haven't even explored the rest of the site. I'm so keyed in on what has occurred here with his experiment. And basically, the guy had an experiment that was spanned multiple years, 5 years. He conceived of the experiment in early 2006, let's say, 2007, took some time to design it, executed the experiment in 2008 with a target date of 2013. Now, the way he did his experiment, it both validates remote viewing as an art, showcases Courtney Brown's skills as a scientist, as a planner, and much more than that, I mean, a masterful executor of experimentation. But it also shows us why we've had so much of this particular language we've had within the our Alta and Shape reports over these past few years. And it now tells us what the hell's going to happen. And I'm here to tell you why I think Courtney Brown is correct and then to add an element that he is missing. I'm here to tell you when it'll happen, I think, and why I think that will occur. So you're going to have to bear with me on this. Back to Courtney Brown's experiment. What he did was he took a group of remote viewers. Say there were 9 remote viewers. He took 9 sites. He took 3 years. 2 years, actually. The 2 years were 2008 and 2013. The times in those years were June in each of the years. But in 2013, he set 2 different conditions. So basically, he said 2013A and 2013B. And in 2013A, the condition would be that the remote viewers were to seek out and see their targets in this year and describe them. And the conditions for that year would be a 2013 in which remote viewing was accepted by mainstream academia as well as the existent as an applicable tool in art, also the existence of extraterrestrials buzzing about. Now, I'm using very loose language. You need to go and read his actual experimentation, the way in which he structured it, and so on, because I'm not going to take the time to repeat that in detail to you. Just to say that I think it's masterful and valid. And I wish I had thought about this component of the predictive approach way back when. It would have been extremely valuable. We still, by the way, have time to use his approach on some very short-term stuff. Anyway, the 2013B would be a world in which remote viewing was still denied by academia, the world in which we live today, actually, still, and in which extraterrestrials buzzing about would also be denied by academia. So basically, you've got the woo-woo world in 2013A and the non-woo-woo world in 2013B. So, and it's a beautiful way to go about it. He did his experiment in 2008 and posted the results in a ahead of time, after all the remote viewing stuff was in, it was all collated, scanned, encrypted, and put out on the internet, so it couldn't be changed. So he was intellectually honest in how they approached this. And then here's the real key to the whole thing: even he didn't know what remote viewer was going to be remote viewing which site, because he left an algorithm, designed an algorithm that allowed for that component of the experiment to be decided in the future by a quasi-random event. The nature of the quasi-random event related to what the stock market would be doing on a specific day, the last 3 digits of the Dow Industrial. He knew it would be within a specific range, but he didn't know what number it would be. Excuse me. this is a very smart fellow, such that he took it even out of his own hands. He devised a range that was sufficiently broad that eliminates the idea of redundant occurrences that would invalidate the experiment itself. And so he thought of everything in terms of how the whole experiment was structured, and then himself was blown away by the results. Now, a lot of the results of the experiment are exposed this year because this is the year in which the algorithm was keyed in, and we knew what the assignment was of the remote viewers to the targets, and the whole thing was unlocked and everybody looks at it, and lo and behold, here's the upshot of it all. The remote viewers in 2000, when they were viewing this target in 2008, see the target. All is well and good. Let's say it's the Sydney Opera House, which was one of the 9 sites. But then when they see that same Sydney Opera House in 2013, either in 2013 Woo Woo World A or 2013 non-Woo Woo World B, the opera house is basically destroyed, as is the local environment to the opera house, and then they have some information about the level of destruction. Now, this is key because these guys weren't searching for any of this kind of thing. They had no idea in advance. They could not have known what they were looking at. They could not have forecast. They could not have put a filter on it. It can't be disinfo because of the way in which the experiment was designed. You don't have to trust me on this. You can go and look at farsight.org and read for yourself. So, the conclusions are that A, remote viewing is valid because they saw the 2008 version at the time they were reviewing it the way it was in 2008, which was everything is skookum, everything's cool. Then they see 2013, and in either case, it's basically gone through a disaster. Now, this is all good news for us. Believe me, I mean, it's kind of weird to say, but it's all good news for us, because now we know. For instance, you'll have to look at the way in which the experiment was conducted and understand a few things about it. It is over. The experiment is done. If they had known at the time they were doing the experiment in 2008 there was even a potential for large-scale disaster or something, maybe they would have put in 190 sites. Maybe they would have looked at a lot of sites inland. Maybe they would have looked at a lot of sites in the Northern Hemisphere. They did not. But it does not matter. Because, and here's my key component to this. After you read the farsight.org material, presuming that you're one of the individuals that's read through some of our reports, you may want to understand that for a number of years we were forecasting and got a partial fulfillment on a language that I had called the global coastal event. And I think at this point, after having gone through the farsight.org material, looked at those experiments, and by the way, you can go to YouTube and find an interview between with Courtney Brown by Kerry Cassidy that covers some 3 hours, and he goes into it in detail. So you don't even have to read the farsight.org. You can go and listen to it all. And he'll also even sell you the whole experiment in a collated fashion on a DVD for low money if you want to collect it and look at it. So, in any event, we had for a number of years the global coastal event. I think that what's going on is that the global coastal event is going to be manifesting between now and June of 2013. June of 2013 is when the remote viewers were targeting, was that particular time. Now, they could be wrong. I think the odds are very low on that because of the nature of my work and the level of success we've had. Even if we took the lowest possible level of measure of our success, but if we did it accurately and said that the language appeared, whether or not an event appeared to support that language, and so we got it in both cases, then we're still shooting at a very distant target, the future, with our work, and we're still able to achieve something on the order of at least better, twice what chance would allow, so about 40%. In some instances, much higher. There were some times when we were spectacularly correct. A lot of those data sets that we were very, very, very accurate with included, as a background, this long-term data set that ran for a number of years, which was about the global coastal event, which I thought we'd reached a level of fulfillment and it had sort of crapped out. Well, it was one of those wide memes, I bet. Because here's the thing. I now think I know why the data gap manifests the way it does. I now think I know that George Ure, to a certain extent, was correct, because he had maintained for a long time that the data gap was all about the infrastructure failure. Yet I could not understand how an infrastructure could fail in this particular pattern and yet produce basically a global demise of the ability to communicate. But it all makes sense. The 2008 experiment with the remote viewing yielded not only the disaster results showing the basically a world in 2013 that has gone through a water-based disaster, or at least a water component disaster. Now, you're going to hear them use the word from this point forward. A lot of people are going to be using the word tsunami. It is not a tsunami as far as these people are describing it. It is a displacement wave, and this needs to be understood. There's a huge damn difference. A tsunami is limited by the coastline in terms of how high it can get and how far it can come in. A displacement wave is not under those limitations. Displacement wave is where you push the water out of the way. In this case, that's what they're suggesting is going to occur. The remote viewers not only located disaster in all of the sites that they were looking at, not all of them, but in a significantly high proportion, Go and look at the interview, and he'll describe that proportion exactly, because he's very much accurate about it. But the displacement waves, getting back to that, in this case, they think are driven from something that comes from the sky. And the sites that they have chosen are not, they didn't choose any inland sites, so we don't have any real understanding of, from their viewpoint, from their data set, what's going on. But if you merge it with our crude data approach from 2003, 4, and 5 that yielded the background data set that we operated under with some of our most remarkable most spectacular, until recently, hits. That data set included as a background to it this long-term projection for this thing, the Global Coastal Event, that was all part of this other thing that I thought was actually manifesting in 2008, maybe earlier, 2007. But we had I won't go into all of the details there because it's middle of the night, but you can go back and read our old reports and you can get the description of the Global Coastal Event. Within that Global Coastal Event, one of the weird parts that we just couldn't fathom was the water actually appeared to, the descriptor could be read either way. The water could be described as not only a wave, but also a resulting period in which the water levels were significantly reduced. Like, you know, 30 meters, 40 meters, reduced to the point where all the global ports that survived were useless. Couldn't get a ship to them. And I couldn't figure out, well, you know, how's this going to occur? What's going to happen here? Is all the water going to evaporate, get sucked into a hole in the ground? What's going to happen? And so it never really made a lot of sense, that component. Well, it does in a displacement wave. If these people are accurate, then basically what the projection is, and this part of it does not matter, by the way, the projection is that it's going to be asteroids or something that'll hit probably likely in the southern hemisphere. I think the southern hemisphere is more likely to have an asteroid meteor strike than the northern hemisphere because of Dr. Bott's model, which you can find on my site in the left or in the right hand column down there, about 2012 and the doom ain't what it's supposed to or used to be and so on. But Dr. Bott's model suggests that the southern hemisphere is much more likely to get these impacts because we're being drugged behind the sun at a fairly good clip, and anything that's going to impact us has to come and sort of chase us. And so, and also the gravity well that's created, the central vacuum core component of how the sun moves through the interstellar medium, and the vacuum that is between all of the planets but doesn't exist outside of us, more or less forces the material into the southern hemisphere. We actually find that there's not a great deal of mega impact sites that are north of the equatorial bulge. There are some, but the vast majority are in the equator or south. In any event, none of that matters. The data sets that these guys have suggest that there's some form of a displacement wave. It appears to be global in terms of its impact, and it appears to be rather severe. The difference between 2013 A woo-woo world versus 2013 B non-woo-woo world is basically a difference in degree. There's still disaster, but in the woo-woo world where remote viewing is accepted, the disaster is less prevalent. There's more people that survive. This, of course, makes perfect sense because imagine the situation right now. If over the next 5 or 6 months this scenario of the impending disaster that's going to strike us leaks out, gets out, is promulgated, is kicked around, forced into people's consciousness and kicked into their throats, a number of people are going to accept the premise that remote viewing actually is acceptable, works. They're going to tie this with the idea that they already know that the extraterrestrials exist and they're going to take action, and so they will survive. If this does not occur, these people won't survive because most of the humans on the planet live around the coast. So this needs to be understood. Now, we had a number of things. We had the data gap. Let's get back to that real briefly. I'll see if I can make time over the next few weeks to talk about this one more time, and then that'll probably be it because I'm going to be a busy bastard preparing for it. But our data gap, because of the gap itself, was not instant. It doesn't occur all of a sudden, boink, it's gone, and the data gap showed up that way. It was a series of holes. Those holes appeared, actually, with the Arab Spring when they started turning off the Internet. Really pissed me off, too, as a way, because I didn't think it was mechanical. I didn't think the data gap, I thought the data gap was at a different level. But in any event, it started appearing and was simultaneous with the Arab Spring when they tried to turn off the Internet stuff. And so it sort of validated that approach, and then the data gap had this big, long hiatus, and then it hits us really hard starting, actually, in about July of this year, where the data gap starts showing up. But its real peak is where the most of the scanner graphic occurs to the point that the gap itself is existent, is from February through May of 2013. Aha, well, if these people are viewing a recent type disaster that people are recovering from in June of 2013, but these guys in their remote viewing didn't know when it happened. They didn't know if it had been 4 months before, half a year before. They knew it wasn't a full year before because we're here, there, now. So they also knew from the perspective of 2013 June, that it was reasonably recent. Well, our data has its maximum level of data gap occur in April of 2013. There are effects, though, that start with the data gap, where big chunks of it start going in February of 2013. This, I think, may be coincident with anticipated other effects of impacts, and that will end the solar disease, and that will be plasma effects, maybe a small Carrington event, something along those lines. But our largest single chunk of data going missing all at once was in April, and then there's a finality where the gap itself is at its most dense in very early May of 2013. Well, that sort of makes sense relative to these remote viewers and their experiment and Courtney Brown's design for it all. Because the targets he chose, he knew in some universe that this shit was going to come down and thus was prompted to do this at a subconscious level. But he didn't know details and so on, so we're lucky we've got the detail we have. Now, I'm quickly going to propose that someone model another larger experiment like Courtney's, do it rapidly with a short-term turnaround of, say, a couple of months, use a different form of an algorithm to assign the remote viewers to the site, remote view a bunch of the inland sites as well as coastal areas all around the planet, get as many remote viewers involved as you can, be as rapid and as efficient as possible, follow his model and be honest about it so there can't be cheating, and let's examine this thing in some detail as to what's going to go on, and I can give you the time frames to even start looking at, and that is this February through May, or February to May, of 2013, with the most likely period in April. And so we could actually get maybe some further idea. I also want to suggest that Ed Dame's approach of saying, well, there are no safe areas that they've found in south of the equator is bullshit. Okay, they haven't found any, or maybe it's not bullshit, they may be quite correct, they haven't found any. Okay, let's not be limited to his lack of foresight in this. Let's get a bunch of people to do some remote viewing on that and organize this that way. It won't cost us anything. There's somebody around without anything to do that could easily put this together and throw it up on a website. I'm in a situation where it's a real good idea. I'd like to see it done. It'll provide useful information. But my time is going to be spent looking through my old data for geographically appropriate notes, and I'm going to be honest here. I'm going to start looking in my local environment to see what the hell's going to happen in Puget Sound. I'm going to go through these notes with the idea of protecting my own butt and those around me, because we can. We've got the time. It's going to happen suddenly. It'll probably be impacts, but they'll probably be preceded by some form of static solar events, this kind of thing. Other issues are going to pop up here. Some of the damage, by the way, is that if we do have an impact, say it's a meteor or an asteroid, big chunk of rock, however you want to describe it, comes on in and hits the Pacific Ocean, a sufficiently large chunk of rock is going to cause the destruction, likely, of the undersea telecommunications cables upon which the internet relies. It's also going to probably destroy vast numbers of cell towers upon which the internet now relies. This is due to the shock wave that will go through both the water and the air. The air shock wave and the water shock wave will transfer through there at different speeds because of the density of the media. The results will be different. We may have mega fires all over. Just because these remote viewers in 2008 did not view any of the inland areas doesn't mean the inland areas are without disaster, because our data showed a whole series of things relative to the global coastal event and other disasters that were relative to inland flooding that made no sense at the time, but do under the circumstances of some kind of a displacement of vast quantities of water by a heated chunk of rock. And the water goes into the air and comes out and precipitates. It's not going to precipitate out over the oceans. Under normal circumstances, there's not a lot of rain created under the oceans relative to the rain created on the land masses anyway. And this time will be an extraordinary circumstance. So all the inland areas will be inundated by vast quantities of water that has been basically shoved up out of the oceans. This will account for the drop in water level that is not persistent, but is persistent enough to be registered for a number of months. But because it'll take that long for a lot of the water to come back to the ocean, and maybe years in some cases if the water is thrown into new lakes and inland seas and this kind of thing. But this is one of those, aha, now we know. If you tie it in with all of our old ALTA reports and with the shape material and the projections for the earth changes and the screwinesses that hit the populace, because we had the evolution out of the blue in 2003 and 4 and 5, we had the evolution of these coastal scavengers that were going to be around. And I thought, okay, eventually we had the Katrina thing, and I thought, well, maybe that was it. Maybe that was the fulfillment of it, because about, oh, maybe 19% or so, I'd have to go and look now, of the language actually showed up. But it wasn't. What it is a precursor, a little example of what we're going to be seeing, a pre-echo, if you will, of future events. There's going to be a major devastation. Most people on the planet live around the coast. Most of the people are going to be impacted. It's going to cause a lot of disruption in the social order. There will be a lot of stuff lying everywhere. There's probably going to be a lot of stuff in the water washing up for years because of the general level of devastation and the destruction of any kind of non-local infrastructure. All of the stuff that washes up and is available in the coast is going to be useful. You're going to gather it because you've got nothing else. This is a common thread that's running through some of these remote viewing sessions. There, if you look at them in from my eyes, from the perspective of the global coastal event that we had started describing in 2003, 4, and 5, that emerged and became mature and I thought had died off, and you look at it in conjunction with the data gap and a lot of the other long-scale or large-level earth changes that we'd had under the sun disease, it all makes perfect sense. In fact, it all fits exceptionally well. Now, the component that the remote viewers did not have, which I'm saying that we do have, is that we have this pre-forecast. This happened. Now, bear in mind, I've been talking about the data gap for years. If you go back and follow some of our previous interviews and some of the discussions George Ure and I have had about the data gap, it is a well-known feature of our work. It existed. And we probably, I don't know for sure, but I bet you we were talking about the data gap in 2008 as their experiment was being conducted. Now, I don't think our data gap discussions in any way could have influenced any of their remote viewers. But I do want to make the point that our discussion is coincident with, but independent of, their experiment, but it sort of validates it in the sense that here we have this point that we predicted we would reach, in which the results of our work were terminated because of factors that we could not understand, and here's what the factors looked like. And I called it the data gap. We now have a data flood at the moment of immediacy data that's overwhelming all of the shorter and longer term data. In fact, get this, guys, for the last shape report, that was one of my real problems, there was no long-term data. Well, aha, now that makes sense. There was no real short-term data in terms of the shorter-term data usually has a connection to a longer-term data set. And while we had shorter-term data, we had no shorter-term data that brought in any long-term values. And thus the paupacy of our ability to do a forecast out even 19 months. This, again, it makes sense. It makes sense because those data sets don't exist, because we're, as a planet, going to be hit by this upcoming kick in the ass, and our ass at this point happens to be in the southern hemisphere where we're likely to receive these impacts, solar or otherwise. There's reason to think that the Ed Dames kill shot solar thing is not going to be accurate the way he describes it. And indeed, we may have solar expulsions, we may have solar material touching Earth, but the whole kill shot idea, where nobody in the southern hemisphere survives, is not validated by these remote viewers, at least in the year 2013. Now, it may be that the kill shot does not occur by June of 2013 and is something that is way off in the future. Because bear in mind, Ed Dames and his crew are in the same situation as these other remote viewers. They cannot set time to things. But we at least know that the termination point in Courtney Brown's experiment is June of 2013. Therefore, there is a finite level of time involved. Unlike Ed Dames, he doesn't know. It could be 4,000 years out. He knows there are certain precursors that will go on. which they think maybe have sort of happened. But also, there's reason to think that Ed Dames people can't discriminate between one of the multiverse occurrences and another, something that's entirely outside of this discussion. In any event, though, so getting back to Courtney Brown so I can wrap this up and try and get back to sleep. I have a lot of work to do relative to getting ready for this. The experiment that Courtney Brown did is validated by our work at this, insofar as the data gap, and it also validates our work insofar as the global coastal event and some of the other earth change crap that we'd had described, some of the material of which has occurred, but much of which was longer term and has not. The likelihood that these two things juxtapose very nicely in this universe is pretty high. Therefore, it makes sense for anybody that listens to this to do a couple of things. Go and examine the farsight.org material. Kick it around. Chew it. Gnaw it to pieces. Make sure you understand it before you accept it. But if you do accept it in your mind, change your worldview around it and do things. Moving inland, I don't know, is the solution. That's for my particular view at the moment, what I'm going to do is to continue on as universe has driven me, which is to be waterborne. Why that is the case, I don't know, but I'm going to examine lots of different parameters about the area in which I live and the various potentials here, as well as my own data sets from these past few years to determine what my course of action will be over these next few months. If you feel driven to move inland, maybe that's the thing to do. If you feel driven to get your ass up high into the mountains, maybe that's the thing to do. But bear in mind, we also have Fukushima. Now, this gets into it briefly. Let me point out a few things. This makes everything make sense. No wonder the powers that be don't give a rat's ass about Fukushima. No wonder there is not a global effort to cap that thing and kick the Japanese into getting out of the way and letting us clean it up. No wonder we're not trying to rescue the global economy. No wonder, blah, 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 just doesn't matter. Anything that the power elite they're doing that makes no damn sense at all in terms of why they're fucking over the planet now all makes sense. They need not care because it's going to happen before June of 2013. So the supposition, in fact, we have a lot of stuff in our data that said that the power elite were going to start disappearing from public sight right around the election time within the populous USA. And so when Hillary is just simply not seen and somebody says in February, we haven't seen Hillary and her ilk here in the last couple of months. Wonder where that fat old broad is. She'll be in her hidey hole. And within a short period of time, you'll see plasma events in the sky. Giant static waves will come through and destroy cell towers and so on. And then there will be an impact wave. And if you're in the northern hemisphere, you may have, let's say in the atmosphere, between 20 minutes and 4 hours, depending on where you would be on the planet, notice before the impact wave swept through the atmosphere. If you're close enough, it'll do things like knock over buildings and trees. If you're far enough away, it'll just blow glass out and knock over smaller, thinner trees. May set shit on fire, I don't know. It will certainly have caused a great level of havoc in the southern hemisphere. It's not going to destroy all life down there, though, unlike Ed Dames' forecast. I have a lot of reason to suggest that this is not true, as well as the remote viewers. But we may have multiple impacts. There was a RAND report or a government report out a number of years back that said that there were going to be a natural disaster in which the Americas were going to take up to 1,200 impacts of small meteors and stuff. That may be the situation that they were talking about occurring in now at this point, and it may be that they were thinking small rocks and we're going to get some fairly large ones. In any event, the result of the remote viewing session is rather clear. Whether it was a brief solar expulsion, the finger of the sun that comes on down and flicks at the Pacific Ocean or something along those lines, the displacement wave result causes devastation in those areas that they looked at, which were all over the southern hemisphere, with a couple of northern hemisphere spots that also received devastation. So we're talking about something, and a lot of the devastation was coastal because the places they were looking at were coastal. It was waterborne. So we need to take all this into consideration. Somebody who has the time and the expertise needs to run another one of the Courtney Brown-style experiments, focusing specifically looking for the inland areas to see what's going to happen there, and they can do it very rapidly. And the rest of us need to get our shit together and start promulgating the idea to create Woo Woo World A 2013 A and save as many of the people as possible. I suspect that a lot of the people in Hawaii will understand this. There will be parts of the planet that are more receptive to this. That's one of the reasons I live in Puget Sound country, is because by nature the toroid where we're at expresses compassion and cooperation up here. We're congested. We're the second largest or second most densely populated area of the west coast, but in general we're much more cooperative, even with the congestion, than other areas. So I'm going to look into this Puget Sound region and do what I can for to promulgate out the idea of where there may be some level of not certainty or even surety, but potential for a better experience as we go through this. A lot of people are not going to understand the remote viewing. They're not going to understand the way Courtney Brown put his experiment together and how it eliminates chance. I don't know if they'll catch on and accept it anyway. I imagine the powers that be don't want this information out because they want a lot of people to die. They're a bunch of ruthless, scum. And don't really understand the value of the expression of consciousness that is every life. So we face an uphill battle. But there's actually hope that Woo Woo World 2013 A can be created. And then the marvelous part of all of this, I'm going to end after this, but the marvelous part of all of this is that Courtney Brown is absolutely correct. We have graduated. This may even be Terence McKenna's Eschaton experience. This may be the driving force that compels us in this particular year. His experiment, I mean, Courtney Brown participates in it, if you look at it this way, because now we know. Now we know that here is a tool that we can use, that we can craft experiments to view the upcoming future. We are no longer its victims. We are now in control. We don't know a whole lot. Okay, we don't have our eyes fully wide open, but we got our hands out, we got our hands wrapped in the short and gnarly hairs, and we're starting to yank on them and get some results. So we've got the universe by the short and gnarlies now, and the more we do this, the more we will gain control and understanding with it. It's going to be a big process, and I suspect that anybody that's a remote viewer is going to be real excited about this, because they have a potential to participate in not only the elevation of the art that they participate in to a scientific tool for the populace, but also to get out there and save people. Because we've got, people are valuable. They're worth it. Not the scum that are going to hide in the holes. More power to them, It's like, by the way, something I've always maintained, those holes are coffins. And if we get a sizable impact, it'll travel through the planet and it'll hit the rock waves and go through these hidey holes in a way that the people inside will not like. In fact, most of them won't even survive. So, on the happy note that the powers that be go and hide in a hole and are turned into some kind of thing resembling a protoplasmic jelly by the concussion wave, and that a great deal of us wise up and go and do things in a cooperative manner, and we survive and rebuild a much more cooperative and focused and energetic society. Now's the time for all of you to say, okay, Cliff's full of shit. I'm going to go and look at this farsight.org thing and go and do it. Thanks.